Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Yes! Touchdown! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami! Dolphins fans, how are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Tuesday, July the 31st, and we got a great show for you today. Later on in the podcast, I will be joined by former Miami Dolphins running back Patrick Cobbs as we talk about a variety of topics. Of course, we start off by talking about the recent passing of Miami Dolphins head coach Tony Sparano, and we also talk about his time in Miami. We talk about the 1-15 season. We talk about the Wildcat. We talk about playing with Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown, what it was like playing for Coach Nick Saban. So we cover a ton of topics with Patrick, and it's a great interview. So we'll have that later on in the show. Before I get to that, though, there's a couple things. First off, as many of you know, today there was no practice. It was an off day for the Miami Dolphins. They had 5 straight days of practice, and today was a scheduled off day. They will be back on the practice field Wednesday morning at 8:30 a.m. No word if that's going to be in full pads or not, so we don't know. We'll find out Wednesday morning when the team takes the field. So there's that. And we're also really right now about 9 days away or so from the first Miami Dolphins preseason game, which takes place on August 9th against Tampa Bay. So that's coming real quick. And we're going to have Miami Dolphins football to talk about, you know, in about a week or so. So that's exciting stuff right there. Like I said, there's not much news to talk about, but I do want to talk about one thing, because I've been getting a lot of tweets and a lot of emails about, you know, the Miami Dolphins backup. I've been getting a lot of tweets and emails about the Miami Dolphins backup quarterback situation. And there was a great article today in the Miami Herald by Armando Salguero, who we have had on this podcast before. Great guy. Everyone should check out this article because he goes in depth about the Miami Dolphins' depth at quarterback. And the question I have been getting a lot, he addresses in his article, is I've had a lot of people reach out to me saying, why isn't Miami entertaining the thought of bringing back Matt Moore? Matt Moore, you know, was his contract expired at the end of last year. He was not signed by anybody. He is 34 years old, which isn't ancient in this league. But, you know, in this league, it's odd. Some guys we see like Wake, like Tom Brady, like Drew Brees, like Peyton Manning up until recently, they can sort of, like Frank Gore now in Miami, they sort of defy, you know, all logic and play, you know, late into their 30s or sometimes into their 40s if they're a quarterback. That's rare. That's a rare breed. Most guys, when they hit, you know, mid-30s, their playing days are over. And Matt Moore is 34 years old. And look, he was not good last year in his 2 starts he had. He was, you know, let's just say it, he was very bad in his 2 starts he had last year. When he came in relief, you know, he was okay at times, but for the most part, he wasn't that great. And one thing, Armando, he shared something I found very interesting that I don't think most fans know, because I know I didn't know. Here's from Armando in the Miami Herald. The truth is, Moore asked for a day of rest the morning before Ryan Tannehill blew out his knee last year in last year's training camp. Just a handful of practices into camp, and Moore's arm was tired. That's not good. When you're only a few days into training camp and your arm, you know, is already pretty dead and needs rest, that's not a good sign for the rest of the season. So there's a myriad of factors on why Miami wouldn't and won't entertain the thought of signing Matt Moore and bringing him back to be the number 2 quarterback this year. Obviously, Matt Moore, great guy, was loved by everyone on the team. And, you know, he was in Miami, you know, for many years, I think since 2011. If I remember correctly. And in 2011, he had a little streak there the second half of the year where he got to play and win some games. And then for a whole bunch of years, he really never saw the field. And then obviously in 2016, after the injury to Ryan Tannehill, he led Miami to wins at the Jets and at the Bills. But those teams that year, the Jets and the Bills, were just god-awful teams to the point where I think Miami probably could have started anyone at quarterback those weeks, and they probably would have won, because it's not like Moore made a ton of great plays. But I know I've been getting asked a lot about this, and then lo and behold, this morning I see this article from Armando Salguero where he goes in depth about all the backup quarterbacks in Miami. Then he mentions Matt Moore at the end. It's just not going to happen, people. Miami has no interest in bringing Matt Moore back. So it sort of is what it is, but I did want to touch on that real quick because I've had a lot of people reach out to me in the past few days talking about that. So right now we're going to take a quick break, and when I come back, I will be joined by former Miami Dolphins running back Patrick Cobbs. It was a great interview, and I think you will all enjoy it. So sit tight, and we'll be back right after this.
Simbad Sports is the number one sports memorabilia company in South Florida and the number one place to go get your Miami Dolphins memorabilia. Simbad Sports has the likes of Rashad Jones, Cam Wake, Kiko Alonso, and Frank Gore in for autograph signings within the past year alone. So when in South Florida area, visit Simbad Sports at 1976 South University Drive, Davie, Florida. Tell them DolphinsTalk.com sent you.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is former Miami Dolphins running back Patrick Cobbs. Patrick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I am doing very good. Before we start talking about your time in Miami, I guess we have to talk about the sad news that we heard of about a week or so back with the loss of your former head coach, Tony Sparano. Why don't you share with us a little bit about how Tony was as a person and what he meant to you and your time in the NFL.
Oh, man, Coach Sparano was an awesome, awesome dude. You know, when he came to Miami, it was at the point to where I didn't know kind of where my career was going. I didn't know if I was going to spending more time. Those guys came in, signed me to a one-year deal, kind of letting me prove it. And the more I talked to him, the more, like, he walked in the room and, you know, he's kind of got a hard personality. You know, he's got his, you know, his Eastern, Northeastern little Italian, you know, thing. And so, you know, you just didn't know how to take the guy, and we were coming off a terrible season, and so it's kind of like, you know, what's next? And he came in and never spoke about the year before, and which speaks a lot about his character. I mean, he was all about the now. He was a guy who lived in the moment. He was a guy who everybody in that locker room respected immensely, and he showed you respect as well. And he was just a phenomenal guy in that way. He was a great, great mentor to me. He's a guy who gave me a chance. He's a guy who gave a lot of guys a chance, and couldn't be more grateful for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've heard a ton of stories since he has passed away about a week or so back. And every story has been nothing but positive. And everyone just has sort of just loved the guy. And he seemed like a great guy. And, you know, his last year he was with the Vikings as their offensive line coach, and he did a heck of a job with that offense and with that offensive line. So just a sad story. So sad to hear about that. Now, when he came to Miami in 2008, obviously the big thing people remember from that year was the Wildcat offense. What do you remember about how that was presented to the team back in 2008?
You know, it was something we kind of experimented with in the off season and early on in camp. Just something that, as camp went on, it was something that, you know, it was something fun at first. Like it was something that obviously, Dan Henning had familiarity with it in Carolina with the running backs that he had there, something that Coach Lee had done at Arkansas. And so all those three minds got together, and they've kind of branched it into, hey, let's get all the running backs on the field at the same time, and let's just run with it. And so early on, it was just very experimental, doing things. And the more we did it, the more they liked it, but never really thought how it was going to be used or anything like that until the third regular season game, after we're 0-2 coming home from Arizona after getting basically punched in the mouth.
And so we kind of
came in that day. I mean, we came in, you know, the Monday, whatever, it kind of got mentioned. That Wednesday, it got talked about a whole lot. Like, hey, we're going to do it. We're going to dive in. And even that day, Wednesday, we didn't know how much of it. We thought maybe, you know, for a series, we'd go in, we'd throw it at them, kind of see how they adjusted to it, whatever, just to kind of give them a curveball. And it ended up working so well, we came back to it over and over and over again, and they never had an answer. And I can't tell you I've ever seen it. And I played with Coach Belichick for a whole offseason. A guy invited me. The guy's a spectacular human. There's probably not a person I respect more in the NFL than Bill Belichick. And that day, Coach Sperano had his number, man, and had the guy baffled. And I don't think it's ever happened since.
No, I don't think so either. On our podcast, we talked to Ronnie Brown a lot. And he has told us he remembers, for him, it wasn't something that was sort of like weird or odd, because he came from the SEC where Arkansas ran it a lot. And he remembers when he was at Auburn, he had seen it a lot. So for him, this was nothing, you know, out of the ordinary. I'm wondering, were some of the guys on the team are like, I can't believe we're really going to try this. I can't believe we're actually going to use this in a game. Was there any of that behind the scenes?
No, there wasn't. Like I said, we'd introduced it in practice, and I don't know, for whatever reason, everybody else thought that, you know, we had confidence in it. And I'm not sure how much the defense really knew whether we were going to run it or not. They were kind of halfway in, kind of halfway out with it. And we did it, and it was great.
Yep, absolutely. And also that year, you were on a roster with two great running backs in Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams. Tell us a little bit about Ricky Williams, because there's a lot of stories out there about him that are all over the map. How do you see him as a person? What was he like as a teammate back when you played with him back in, you know, in that 2006, 7, 8, 9 time period?
He was awesome. I mean, he became one of my closest friends on the team, especially in 2008, 2009, 2010, during that time of the deal. He was awesome to me. I mean, you know, you hear about, you know, all the weed and stuff like that. Yeah. But during that period, I mean, the guy got drug tested, I think, at least three or four times a week. And so, I mean, he was clean and he was hanging out and joking around. And, you know, it was just fun. You know, Ronnie was awesome. You know, Rick was awesome. Me and Rick actually played Call of Duty all the time online together. And so it's kind of like, that was just Rick, you know, and it was just, you know, just laid back. Our families kind of got together. They swam. Ricky to me is a great guy. Now, you know, I talk to him every once in a while now, or actually I hadn't talked to him in the last couple of years or so. And I, you know, kind of friends on social media, but I mean, I guess he's kind of doing his own thing back with the marijuana or whatever. And it's funny now, like how it doesn't seem so crazy now that all these states legalized marijuana.
He's almost like a pioneer in some ways. He is almost like a pioneer in some respects, because now it's so accepted just by almost everybody all throughout the country. And you think back to 2004, which I know you weren't there in Miami, but when that all went down in 2004, you know, he was like villain number one in South Florida. Nowadays, if something were to happen, they'd be like, it's just weed. It's no big deal. You know, so the times really have changed in the past 10 years or so because, in 04, when that went down, he was not very welcome down there. But his second stint, I mean, was probably as good or better than his first stint in Miami because, and look, that's a heck of a running back room with yourself, with Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams. It doesn't get much better than that.
Ricky was awesome, man. Yeah, he was. I remember the first time I met him. You know, I went to school in Texas. Obviously, he went to school in Texas. He was a big deal. I didn't go to high school in Texas, but I played in college, so everybody knew Ricky. Obviously, he won the Heisman. He was the guy. And you heard all the rumors about Ricky. You know, him signing with Master P and him doing this thing, like everything that comes with Ricky Williams. You know, him on the cover with Dicka in a wedding dress. And so the first time we meet him, you know, I don't even really know how to respond to the guy. And, you know, he shows up in 2007 after he comes back after we're awful. And I remember him practicing the week. He practiced for a week that he didn't play the first week. But I remember the first time I seen that guy carry the ball and he hits the hole and he takes off and he literally runs like almost 60 or 70 yards down the field. And like, and I'd been in the league, this was my second year in the league, and I'd never seen that before. And I was like, well, I guess that's what you're supposed to look like. And from that day forward, he changed the dynamics of the running back. Like Ronnie Brown was running down the field. I was running down the field. Like everybody always finished plays because he made the whole room better by the way he worked. And that just, he didn't have to say much. He just had to see him watch or see him work, and it was just, it was crazy. I can't remember who said it. Somebody was like, he's been like that dog that's been caged up in the backyard for like 6 years, and somebody finally let him out, and he takes off, and you can't catch him. That's what he looked like when he first came back. Like, he was just taking off down the field, sprinting. I mean, he had light legs. It was crazy. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was a heck of a player. There's no doubt about that. Now, you first came to Miami. You were brought to Miami by Nick Saban. And obviously he's someone else who's a larger than life icon of the sport. One of the great head coaches in NCAA history for sure. If not, maybe the best ever when it's all said and done. What do you remember about Nick and how is he like as a head coach?
Nick was awesome. Nick was awesome. So I've been so fortunate. Like I started out with the Patriots, Bill Belichick, obviously, then I came to South Florida with Nick Saban, and it was like, you know, I was fresh out of college, and so when I got there, I didn't know anything but how to work hard, how to run full speed, how to do exactly basically what you did in college, and that's kind of the feel that I had under him, except for the demand that he demanded upon every player, and he let you know exactly, it didn't matter who you were. He was going to tell you exactly what you needed to be doing, how you needed to be doing it, regardless of how well you thought you were doing it. He was going to let you know exactly what he thought about the way it was. And Nick was phenomenal. He demands that. And I think that's what makes him such a successful coach in college. He demands greatness. And if you don't give it to him, he'll find somebody else. You know what I mean? He'll find somebody else that'll give it to him.
Yep, absolutely. Nick's, I mean, he is a great coach. I know a lot of fans in Miami aren't happy with the way he left, which is sort of understandable and stuff, but there's no doubt about it. He is one of the great football minds that has ever, you know, sort of walked the sideline. And I don't know if you heard it. If you haven't, I highly recommend. There was a podcast about 2 or 3 weeks ago with O.J. McDuffie and Channing Crowder. You should listen because Channing Crowder shares about 5 or 6 stories about Nick Saban that are absolutely hilarious. I will send you the link if you haven't heard it. You should listen because it's very entertaining to say the least. I will say that. You haven't? I will send you the link.
It's one story about him and Dante Culpepper.
Oh. He didn't share that one.
He didn't share that one. Then I won't share it either. I just had to see what
Here's what he shared. I'll tell you what he shared. He shared the one where Keith Traylor sort of had a rough day of practice, was yelling at him all throughout the practice as they were running sprints at the end. And he tells it in a very colorful way, let's just say Channing does. And then he shared The other one that really comes to mind is when he ran into Nick Saban in the restroom and he asked him how his wife was doing, and Nick had a pretty wise-ass response. It was just, I mean, he shared so many. I will send you the link after the podcast so you can listen. It is worth the listen because nobody can tell a story like Channing Crowder, and they are very entertaining.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Yes, very entertaining. Now, Saban leaves, and in 2007, obviously it's a rough year. Obviously, that's a long year. At what point in 2007 did you realize this is going to be a long year? Did you know right away, like, we might not win a lot of games this year? Or did it take till October, November when it finally started to hit you, like, this isn't going good at all, and I don't know where how this is going to sort of end? At what point in 07?
It was, you know, we didn't really know because every game we lost by so close. It was like we were right there. It felt like we just, you know, play here, play there. It just, it always came down to the end, and, you know, the ball didn't bounce our way and we lost the game. I can't remember what it was, but like we lost so many games by 3 points or less that year. And it was just kind of disappointing. And, you know, I can't really ever say that it was at a point to where, like, this is going to be an awful year. But I knew things were different whenever, you know, all the team meetings started happening. And, you know, the guys saying, hey, we need a team meeting, no coaches, this and that. And then everything was going on. And that's when you kind of figure, you know, things aren't going very well. Me just being the second-year guy, just kind of kept my head down and played as hard as I could. And so I was trying to stay on the team without getting cut, because when you're losing and you're at the bottom of that roster, you're usually the guy that goes home. So
yeah, it's a rough spot.
I was just trying to play hard and stay on the team.
Yeah, and you are 100% right, because I sort of forgot how many close games there were. I'm looking at it right now. You lost to Washington by 3. You lost to the Jets by 3. You lost to Houston by You lost to Cleveland by 10. You lost to the Giants by 3. You lost to the Bills by 3. You lost to Philadelphia by 10. You lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers 3-0. There are a lot of games, 10 points or less, that you guys were right there. And, yeah, and, you know, you would think at some point you'd catch one break. It didn't really happen until week 15 when you played the Ravens and you finally got your first win. What was the locker room scene like after that win? I know, look, when you're 1-13, you know, you can't celebrate too much, but it seems like that game, you know, after a long year like that, it seemed like you guys celebrated like it was a Super Bowl, and I don't blame you.
It was, and that's exactly what it felt. It felt like the Super Bowl. Like we had finally, and it was in overtime.
Yes,
like that happened in overtime. Like it was finally, we got the monkey off our back that we wasn't going to go 0-whatever. And so we just batted our tails off, got a victory, and we finally, after 13 weeks, I think it was, of just constantly battling and coming up on the wrong end of the set, we battled and finally came out of the end. And it feels good when you put that much in. And you finally get a win. So it was awesome. And hats off to Greg Camarillo, who's probably one of the closest guys on the team to me, that end up making the big play to make it all happen.
Yep, absolutely. Are you still a fan of the Miami Dolphins these days? How much of them are you able to watch?
I do. I watch them as much as I can. Usually when I'm hanging out, I'm in Texas, so usually when I'm hanging out, people will watch whatever local game's on down here. Or if I'm at home, I always try to flip over and see what those guys are doing. I try to keep up. I don't keep up as much as I want to, but I do love what's going on there. I love Gase. He's been awesome. He invited me back 2 years ago to go to their OTA or their mini camp and the start of their training camp. So I can't say enough great things about him as far as, you know, trying to get the alumni back and stuff like that. So I wish them the best. I hope that, you know, a run can happen. That league is getting harder and harder. The Patriots, they're a tough team. And you know, the Jets are going to be better. The Dolphins are going to be better, though. So I'm looking forward to it, man. I think if, you know, you break the you break this through, you get out, you got a chance, because that's, I mean, division's getting harder and harder each year.
Absolutely. And you think one of these years, you hope and you think, and you just think almost the law of averages, one of these years, New England is due for a year where they sort of slip up. Maybe it's this year. I don't know if it's possible. It seems like they've just have just sort of run over this entire AFC East for so long. But you have to think, as they start to get a little bit older, one of these years they're just bound for a down year. Hopefully it's this year, but I don't know. Maybe not.
I don't, it's going to be tough. Well, number 12 is back there taking snaps. It's going to be pretty hard for them to have down here. The year that we actually won it was the year he tore his ACL.
I know.
And he pulled the Wildcat out. So it was like the perfect storm, really.
They still won 11 games. And they still won 11 games without him.
Absolutely. The year before that is when they had that, you know, obviously, that what is it, 18-0 they went or whatever.
Yep.
And when we went 1-15, they went 18-0 and then end up losing in the Super Bowl, but that was a phenomenal football team. So it was awesome the next year to beat those guys. So it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you played a lot of special teams when you were in the NFL. What do you think about the new rule changes with that, and how do you think that's going to change the game sort of? Because they have drastically changed the game when it comes to special teams, and especially with the opening kickoffs and such.
Now, I know how it is, and did it carry over to like the fair catch inside the whatever?
No, they sort of changed it in that there's like, I think between the 35 yard lines, the return team isn't allowed to touch the kickoff team. I might not have that exactly right, but there's a plot of land. I think it's between the 35s or between the 40s where there can be no contact, not counting like an onside kick, obviously. And they have to be so far down the field before anybody can be touched. It's
wow.
Weird. And how guys line up, so many guys have to line up outside the hash marks and so many guys have to line up outside the numbers. That's changed. I don't know all the specifics, but it's going to drastically change the game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, every year, more and more, they mess with the kickoff, and they're trying to do a better job of protecting players, but they are changing the game, and they're trying. Eventually, they're going to take kicking out of the game, and it's sad because a lot of guys make their money on special teams, and if you take that point out, then there's no need for those guys anymore. And so it will be sad, you know. I look at those special teams guys, and. You know, I envy those guys running down the field, being the first one down the field, making the tackle and doing things like that. You know, field position changes games, and special teams has a big part of that. And for them to take that out, it kind of changes the dynamic a little bit.
Absolutely, because if you can flip the field, it really does change the game for like half a quarter or sometimes for an entire quarter of a game. If you can get a big play on special teams, like you said, there's guys in Miami recently like Michael Thomas, Walt Akins, who have made a living being special teams player, and there's all types of guys all around the league like them. That's going to change, I think, how the game is played and what goes on there. So we'll see how it goes, but it is very interesting to watch. So, Patrick, what are you up to these days? And I believe you said you're in Texas, right?
Correct. I actually live in Frisco, Texas, but I coach high school football in Denton, Texas.
Awesome.
With the Denton Ryan Raiders. So yeah, I coach football here. This will be my fifth year coaching running back and doing special teams basically. So having fun. It's fun. Not sure how much my family loves me being gone, but I'm having a blast.
That's awesome. That's awesome here. So thanks so much for a few moments of your time tonight, Patrick. I'm sure we'll have you on again down the road for sure. And you have a great night.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it, man. Anytime.
All right. You have a good one.
The London and Jeff Show is a brand new Miami Dolphins podcast here on DolphinsTalk.com. Jeff is a 3-time Emmy Award-winning TV producer, and Landon is his 12-year-old son. Both are diehard Miami Dolphins fans who have their unique perspective on the team and the happenings taking place with the Miami Dolphins. Be sure to check out the Landon and Jeff Show exclusively right here at DolphinsTalk.com.
Once again, I would like to thank Patrick Copps, former Miami Dolphins running back, for joining us today on the podcast. He was a great spot, and we will have him on again for sure down the road. Now, here's the plan for the week. I want to give everybody the plan for the week. We're going to have podcasts every day this week, running down recaps of the Miami Dolphins practices, but we also have a bunch of interviews lined up as well. On Wednesday's podcast, I'll be joined by Miami Dolphins beat reporter Antoine Staley for USA Today. He covers the Miami Dolphins for USA Today, as this is the first of his weekly spots. He will be with us all year long. So Anton will be with us once a week, all year, talking about the Miami Dolphins. This is the first of his weekly spots. So he will be on a Wednesday show. On Thursday, I will be joined by a celebrity who is also a fan of the Miami Dolphins. That's all I'm going to tell you. He's a celebrity you've all heard of, and he's also a fan of the Miami Dolphins. And we're going to talk about Miami Dolphins and get his thoughts on the team this upcoming 2018 season. So on Thursday's show, be on the lookout for that. And I'm still working on maybe one more interview later in the week or on the weekend, but I'm just sort of trying to figure out a time to record with this person. So we're going to have a bunch of interviews the rest of the week. And, of course, we will have shows every day recapping the events that took place in practice for the Miami Dolphins. So be on the lookout for that. As always, check out the main website, DolphinsTalk.com. We got a bunch of new articles up. Ryan Van Hoover's written a couple great articles that you will want to read. And we just got a bunch of great new content up at DolphinsTalk.com that you won't want to miss. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at DolphinsTalk. Wherever you listen to this podcast, whether it's iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever, be sure to subscribe to it. And if you want to leave us a rating and a comment, it's always appreciated. Feel free to do that as well. So, and because once you subscribe to it, then you will automatically be notified when a new show drops. It goes right to your smart device. So it always helps to subscribe to our podcast wherever, whether it's on Podbean, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, iTunes. We're all over the place. Subscribe to it. I'm trying to think of anything else. I think that's it for today. As always, be sure to support the websites that also re-air this podcast. They are FinFanatic.com, TheGruelingTruth.net, FinFever.com, and Dolphin-UK.com. Everyone, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. And we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.